First, I'm going to ask the officers, how much time do we have left in our 1 hour's debate on this? We have 44 minutes. 44 minutes. If you run out of questions, it will be quicker. I leave that open to you all. So I would now like to move to item 7D, which is questions to the Executive Member for Public Health, Localism and Libraries. Is there a question from the Liberal Democrat? Yes, Ron Tindall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask the portfolio holder that given the impact on social care in the NHS that will be caused by the reduction in public health funding, can the portfolio holder explain what approaches are being made to the new government to highlight the importance of funding public health to an appropriate level in order to assist the NHS recovery?
Theresa Heritage.
Thank you for that question. At the moment, I don't know who the new Minister for Public Health is, but I can assure you that once I do know, and there are rumours around Westminster who it's going to be, I will be writing to seek a meeting potentially, and hopefully we can build up as good relationship as we had with Jane Ellison MP. I know that the Health Select Committee yesterday actually made comments around NHS funding and the lack of funding towards prevention. So I know that that's going to be on the government agenda, and I'll certainly be pushing for that to go forward.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary?
Could I perhaps suggest that, Theresa, that you round up the 11 MPs we've got in this county and give them something to do, namely collar the new Prime Minister in the corridors and point out to her that cutting public health is a bit stupid when you're trying to save money on the NHS?
I made those approaches with the last government and I'm sure I'll be doing it again.
Thank you. Now, is there a question from a Labour member?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this morning in debate, I think all members of the Council were very supportive that good mental health should remain a top priority in Hertfordshire. And many people spoke about children and young people and the need to make sure that if they are having some experience that's negative, that they should be signposted or given the right intervention. I wonder if the portfolio could tell me how confident she is that given substantial cuts of $500,000 in the health visiting budget and $750,000 in the school nursing budget, how well we will be able to ensure that these gatekeepers are still there to direct children appropriately at the earliest possible time. Thank you, Chair.
We made it very clear at my last panel that we, even though we were going to have to take out some funding for health visitors and school nursing, we were going to ensure that the new service was redesigned to deliver exactly what we wanted to deliver. So I can assure members here today that we will use our best resources, not just financial, to ensure that our young people get the services they need. And also working with the voluntary sector as well.
Thank you. Roma, is there a supplementary question? Then, is there a question from the Conservative member? Colette Wylow.
Thank you, Chairman. At the recent LGA conference, I was pleased to second a motion that was put actually by my Lib Dem counterpart in Cambridgeshire with precisely public health measures, and we did discuss this before then. I'm sure you'd be pleased to know, or would you be pleased to know, that proposal received cross-party support at the LGA and is being pursued vigorously with regard to public health funding because it benefits all of us?
Obviously very pleased, thank you.
Is there a supplementary? Right, so moving on. Resources and performance. The questions to the executive member. Is there a question from the Lib Dem group, Liberal Democrat group? Note from the Labour group. Leon Reef.
Chair, thank you. Can I just ask the portfolio holder, given the report that came to the panel on the 20th of June regarding the surplus, and taking into consideration the report from the annual report, which talks about the social care precept introduced by the government for this year, and that we now have further savings of at least £125 million a year by 2019-20, How does he foresee this being applied, given that, and I will be agreeing with Ron Tindall here, that the new Chancellor did mention the comment about the age of austerity being at an end. So will he give us some insight into how he may be thinking we could actually do the things that we are elected to do, and that's serve the public?
Thank you. I'll call Chris Hayward.
Well, can I thank the leader of the Labour group for his question? He promised me at lunchtime a juicy question, as he put it, so I'll do my best to give him a response. Surpluses, as Leon refers to them, or underspends, as I prefer to call them, have been achieved to a much lesser level in this past year than any previous year, as he and his colleagues will know. He will also know the pressures on our finances for the next 3 years. And that is why I said earlier in my response to Councillor Tindall that the period of austerity is not yet over. And certainly, as far as we're aware, unless the new government advises us otherwise, we are going to have to make some significant savings over the next 3 years. And it's for that reason that I see such underspends as exist as being used to supplement the Investor Transform Fund, which has been and continues to be one of our most successful methods at tackling savings. My aspiration is to protect the really vulnerable people in our county from direct cuts or direct savings on frontline services. So whether it be the old, the young, the sick, the vulnerable members of society, I hope that we can maintain those frontline services as best as we possibly can. But one of the ways we do that is by doing things differently. It's by thinking out of the box. It's by finding new ways to deliver services which are more cost efficient. So I don't see great piles of wadges of cash accumulating in the Hertfordshire Exchequer. I see them as being used proactively to find further savings to our budget demands.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary?
Thank you very much. Well, that's all very well, and I understand why you're making the comments. Well, what I don't understand is why you are not actually listening to the new Prime Minister when she talks a very good Ed Miliband manifesto before she actually went through the doors of Number 10, and then promptly decided to appoint a rabidly right-wing cabinet. It's a shame that you weren't at the LGA, and I'm sure you had your reasons for not being there. If you had been, you would have heard the view of economics by the Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell. And even some of the members here who were there were actually clapping his theories, which I found very interesting. So why would you look at some of the theories regarding his economic plans and maybe try and embrace some of them?
Chris Hayward again.
Well, I don't think I'm about to take any lectures or advice from the Labour Party on good economic management, given that it was that country, that was that party that forced this country into the economic crisis that we faced. One which I might add is the reason why we will have 3 more years of austerity, 3 more years of having to make savings in this authority because of the irresponsible financial management of the Labour Party. And I'm certainly not going to take economic lessons from John McDonnell, of all people, let me say. I'm sure that if my colleagues were applauding him, it was no more than polite applause. Polite applause is very different from enthusiastic endorsement, and I'm sure, looking at the previous Chancellor over there who you're pointing at, he was politely applauding, nothing more. And I don't think McDonnell economics and Lloyd economics are of the same character, I'm sure. So let me just say that I don't either, incidentally, accept the charge about a rabidly right-wing cabinet. Where were you when Prime Minister May made the appointments? Well, I'm not saying she should have offered you a job, but there is a good balance of both Brexiteers and Remainers in the cabinet. It is a strong, united and very talented cabinet.
Point of personal explanation, I feel I ought to make it clear.
Under which point of order, Mr. Lloyd?
As a point of personal explanation, I ought, as my name has been taken, I was indeed in that audience, and can I just underline that I am very, very happy that John McDonnell is the Shadow Chancellor, and I do hope that he stays there for a long time, and I was very happy to congratulate him in that role.
We will have no jokes on rising temperature, if you don't mind. Right, moving on to, is there a Conservative question to our Chancellor? Nope. So let us move to questions to the Executive Member for Adult Care and Health. Is there a question from the Liberal Democrats? Ron Tindall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colette, the Hertfordshire Equipment Services, having been redesigned to make it fit for purpose, is now working well. And I wondered if you would agree with me that it would be good if the NHS, in their reorganisation of the wheelchair service, was to actually end up actually working with us and setting up a rival organisation.
Colette Whitelow.
Thank you, Chairman. Provision of the wheelchair service, as you say, is an NHS service, and HS did used to deliver the logistical arm of that. It would be a matter for the NHS whether they wanted to come back to us with regard to how that service progresses, but of course any questions regarding that, then do feed them back to us and of course to officers for consideration.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary? Ron?
I wonder perhaps if you could use your good offices as Chair of the Health and Wellbeing Board to persuade them that joined up writing and a common service would probably save costs a lot to both sides.
I'm always for common sense solutions, Ron. If there is one to be found, if there is one needed, then of course I will look at it.
Thank you. Is there a question from a Labour member? Trida Gordon?
Chair, Given the level of debate on adult care services this morning, I'm not minded to ask any further questions. I didn't get very satisfactory responses to the points that we put forward earlier.
I don't think I heard a question in that, but if Colette Whitelow wanted to make a comment or not, it's her choice.
I would like to make a comment. I dealt fully with the issues that were raised this morning. I'm sorry if you couldn't find the information that you were looking for in there. However, as always, if you aren't satisfied, you have recourse to providing me with a written question, and I'll be happy to take it further through that medium.
And as there was probably no question, there's probably no supplementary. Is there a question from the Conservative side? Nope, so let's move on to Children's Services. Questions to the Executive Member for Children's Services. Is there one from the Liberal group? Liberal Democrat group, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In the recent panel meeting, when we were shown the KPIs, the proportion of our young people aged 16 to 18 who are NEET was standing at 3.5%, which is really quite a good figure. But when you looked at our CLA, the children looked after, the 16 to 18 figure is now 1 in 4 of those children not in education or training, and alarmingly, the 19 to 21 age group is 50-50. Half of them are not in education or training. Does the Executive Member agree with me that this is unacceptable, and can he tell me what action he is taking to address this?
I would agree it is a challenge, isn't it, that our cohort of children who are not in care, only 3.5% of them, I think it's the lowest NEET rate in the country, and 18%, that means that we are 4 or 5 times above the background rate for NEET, and it isn't acceptable, and we have to work hard to achieve that. What is even more, I think, shocking is the 46% of 19 to 21 year olds. What I would say is that a huge amount of effort is put into taking our young people from relatively low and poor academic qualifications through the opportunity of training, education, and employment. And if I just let you know that at present we have 365 of our 472 care leavers at college. We have 56 of them are with training partners we have 33 with training providers and 23 with apprenticeships, seven of whom are with the County Council. As you know, and I have said before, we have nearly 60 who are at university, and this year we have more than one, possibly three or four or five, who have first-class honours degrees. These are huge improvements, and these are the opportunities that are available to our children leaving care. But I do agree with you, we have got to make further progress, and particularly for that older cohort, that post-19, when those young people are coming out of a formal education but not at university, that is when we have got to, particularly through Youth Connections and their personal advisors, to do everything we can to encourage them to move into some form of either volunteering or apprenticeship or some kind of work experience. And for some of those young people, that's difficult.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary, Mark?
I think just a brief one, Madam Chairman, and it is really to say, what sort of figures do you hope to get the figure down to? I mean, obviously, at least down to the same figures of 16 to 18 would be a good start. I'm talking about the 19 to 21, which is where the massive challenge exists.
Well, I think you may also have noticed that 2 years ago, the figure was over 60%. So we've improved it by 20% for those young people. I would like to see another 20% improvement. And the 18% of those 16 to 19 who are NEET, I would like to see that reduced further as well. So I think we need to make substantial improvements on where we are. But these are a challenging cohort of young people, a significant effort is going to be required to achieve those substantial improvements.
Thank you. Is there a question from a Labour member?
Thank you, Chair.
There's a challenge, okay. Nigel Bell.
Thank you, Chair. Richard, you'll know obviously at the end of June, middle to the end of June, we had the local area inspection on special educational needs. Have you had any feedback on that yet?
I have had confidential feedback with senior officers on that. And I don't think it would actually be appropriate to say much more other than that I'm confident that the report that will come back to us will give the letter of support for some of the changes that have been made to our special education need and disability services. And I particularly welcome in the autumn the new 0-18 together, or the services for young people disabled, which will join up the disabled services and those adult care transition services, so that what parents receive are and their children will be a continuity that they've not had before. And I think some of that will be recognised in the letter that we get back from CQC Ofsted Joint Inspection.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. Yeah, just to follow up on that, yeah, I did have a brief word with Jenny about this, and I hope, you know, I'll wait to hear the results from the letter. But obviously, I usually always try and raise the question of the voice of the child. And obviously, we had the last county council meeting. I think we were all affected and we were all very impressed by the brilliant performances of our, you know, Children in Care Council. So can you just give an assurance that you will actually try and actually find out whether those inspectors took account of the voice of the child? I know they did of the parents, but a proper account of the voice of the child in when they actually went to the various sites.
Richard.
I think that the question you ask about the voice of a disabled child is probably one of the most challenging and the most necessary for us to understand. And great strides have been made there. And if you remember from the Ofsted inspection that we had last year, the inspectors thought we had exemplar involvement of young people and then acting on what they told us. And I hope that we get some of that come back through here. Parents are very important as well in terms of us listening to the services that their children receive. And the HPCI, which is the Parent Carers Involvement Board, are a very, very committed group of parents who we listen to and work very closely with to make sure that parents of disabled children get in the round to make sure they're voice heard and that they influence the services that their children receive.
Thank you. Is there a question from a Conservative member? No, then I'm just going to ask. I have a feeling that one of the fans isn't working and it's really quite hot up here. Is there any chance of... Is there a problem with that one? Or can it be turned on or moved along slightly? I'd be very grateful.
Madam Chairman, I turned it off a while ago. It was causing an awful blast.
Can it be moved slightly so that it's in a slightly better location? Because I can see people waving their bits of paper in that area, and certainly it's quite warm here. That would be helpful. If not, I understand. Not wanting to lose any seconds of our debate, let us move on to community safety and waste management. Is there a question to the Executive Member for Community Safety and Waste Management from the Liberal Democrat Group? Malcolm Cowan.
Thank you very much. It's good to see that the job of a director of adult care even extends to the care of those on the top table. My question is, some months back, there was feedback from this council to Wayne Hatfield Council about property aspirations, including the aspiration of the county to close both the Welwyn Garden City and Hatfield fire stations for the land to be rezoned for housing, with a view to having a combined operation on the A1000 right next to the traffic jams on at Oldings Roundabout. Welwyn Hatfield have, in their infinite wisdom, decided that Welwyn Garden City fire station site should not be zoned for housing, it should stay as industrial. In the light of that, do you have a cunning plan that will also see that station closed, or can I go back to my constituents and tell them that they are safe with a fire service, fire station for the fifth largest town in the county?
Thank you.
You can certainly go back to your constituents and tell them that they are safe, because the County Fire Service will continue to deliver its excellent and exemplar services come what may. And the answer, in essence, to your question is that at the appropriate time, I will bring forward for debate through my panel and through this council proposals to deal with the fire service going forward. At this moment in time, until the this round of local plan emerging local plans has settled down to a degree, it's far too early to launch into that, and so I have to say, watch this space.
Is there a supplementary, Malcolm?
Yeah, just say I'll take that rather long answer as being a no, and just pass on, is he aware that some of the senior fire people are very concerned about the plan to relocate to the A1000?
I think you have extrapolated a normal property a response from this authority. When we are a statutory consultee on each of these local plans, and obviously as part and parcel of our professional and perpetual development programme, we like to take opportunities to extend and expand and improve our services, and that particular reference to the Welwyn Hatfield local plan was nothing more than that. We will do it for everyone. There is nothing cast in stone. I've told you this before and I repeat it now.
Thank you. Is there a question from the Labour Group? Richard Henry.
Thank you, Chair. Richard, you'll be aware at the last Community Safety and Waste Management Cabinet panel on the 1st of July that an officer report highlighted the increase in fly tipping over the last year in the county, along with that suggesting that there was no correlation with the partial closure of the county waste and recycling centres. Does the portfolio holder still believe that closing waste and recycling centres has not led to an increase in fly tipping, and can he confirm whether he still believes in unicorns and fairies?
Unicorns and fairies. I'm not sure that I ever did believe in unicorns and fairies. There is no correlation, and I think that the evidence shows that. Yes, there has been an increase, and that is deplorable, and you will be very well aware, as being your borough's representative on the waste partnership, that or at least close to your representative on the waste partnership, I beg your pardon, that we are looking at a whole county proposals to try and deal with this issue, with, I might say, some exceptionally good support from the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner in terms of helping us to prepare a county-wide solution. We've got to stamp down on it. It is absolutely no good individual districts and boroughs taking action and driving it over the border, because if we don't have a cross-county attitudes to it. In essence, I would suggest no tolerance. What will happen is that we'll drive it into places where they are either incapable of enforcing to the degree that is necessary or don't want to. And that is something that I think would not be in the best interest of the county. So a whole county-wide proposals and initiatives coming through the Waste Partnership, which we will be developing going forward. And of course, I will be reporting back to this place through the appropriate channels.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary?
Yeah, just very briefly, Chair. Thank you. I'm not the the representative on the Waste Partnership, as you sort of indicated, Richard, Chair. I mean, I value the work of the partnership because I think it is a good partnership generally in Hertfordshire. If that analysis of the recycling of the fly tipping does demonstrate a correlation with the waste and recycling centres, will you then reopen them so that we can reduce fly tipping in the county?
No, because fly tipping is illegal, and frankly, it still costs the ratepayers one way or another to have it collected and disposed of. We are still the disposal authority, irrespective of how it's deposited. No, the answer simply is that we want to drive up recycling. We want to drive down the amount of residual waste that we send to landfill. Those initiatives are in hand, and from the point of view of the household waste recycling sites, they provide an exceptionally good service. They're still open 5 days a week. As you well know, the contiguous sites, when they are closed, there are adjacent sites which are open. And I think, frankly, to just throw away the savings that we've managed to achieve because a problem is burgeoning, and it's without question, in my mind, quasi-commercial, We've got to stamp on it. It's not there is no way that waste should be coming to our household recycling centres if it is commercial. They are household waste recycling sites, and that is what the service is for. And I still do not believe, and I'm sure that you will come back to this point time and time again because you seem to do so. I still do not believe that responsible householders and citizens will dump waste by the side of the road or anywhere else just because their local recycling centre doesn't happen to be open at the hours that they want. I think, frankly, there are other mechanisms to deal with this, and those mechanisms do not include opening sites when we can't afford to do so.
Thank you. And a question from a Conservative member, Colette Whitelow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Would the portfolio holder be pleased to hear that on Sunday I visited our local waste reclamation site, which is Sunday peak time. I arrived there at 10 to 12. I drove straight in. It was busy but efficient. I came out. My second visit, I had to wait for two cars to go in front of me. That's on Sunday peak times. The problems associated with Hemel, which is one of those which did has profile raised, do seem to be eliminated at the moment.
Thank you for that.
Right, and presumably no supplementary. So we move on now to enterprise education and skills. Is there a question to the Executive Member for Enterprise Education and Skills from the Liberal Democrat Group?
Yes, there is, Madam.
Mark Watkin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. While the government is set on dismantling the local education authority's control of local education through the development of multiple academy trusts, the residual responsibility with the authority will stay with special educational needs. However, its delivering special provision locally strategy is massively bureaucratic and hugely unpopular with all its stakeholders, parents and schools alike. Is it not time for the Executive Member to carry out a full review of this service and its future sustainability?
Thank you. David Williams.
Thank you, Chairman. Mark, Nigel Bell and I attended the DSPL conference back at the Fielder Centre in May, June. And this was one of the first opportunities for the DSPL teams, the Delivering Service Provision Locally teams, to get together and reflect on the SEND strategy. And certainly one conclusion I took away was that the teams were making very good progress locally and that there was support for the strategy. We've now seen the inspection And obviously we await the inspection result, but that will be, I'm sure, a significant pointer. The other thing that we're now seeing in terms of the implementation of the SEND strategy is that we're seeing significant work streams coming forward. So you would have heard at the schools forum last week that the autism strand was presented to schools, and we know that the behaviour strands is going to follow, and the extra finance strand is going to follow thereafter. So I have to say, I think there is real momentum. And so given that momentum, I'm not suggesting at the moment that we re-examine our SEND strategy.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary? Splendid. Is there a question from the Labour group? Judy Billing.
Oh, thank you, Chairman. David will remember that there was a kinder and a gentler and a nicer world in the olden days of about a month ago, in which the main axis of evil seemed to be that which had been occupied by Mr. Gove and Miss Morgan, and we'd had an education bill that was really very distressing, and then a bit of a recanting to that bill, and then maybe not a recanting to that bill, and now the whole world's changed again, and it's for some of us not a very nice place at all. But there is just a glimmer, maybe, that there is a new education secretary, and I just wonder, since our portfolio holder must obviously be in the know about what's going on, whether there are any signals coming from government to him or to his mates and the county council's network or anywhere else about what the fate is at the moment of the education bill and what's likely to be happening and when, please. Thank you.
David Williams.
Thank you, Judy, for that question. I think we should just pause before looking at this, at the new Secretary of State, and just reflect on the contribution of the last Secretary of State, because I think it's fair to say that she built on the quite radical and reform agenda of the previous Secretary of State. He, in fact, from my perspective, turbo-boosted the legacy of Andrew Adonis, of David Blunkett, of Kenneth Baker, and that as a consequence of that reform that's happened since 2010, there has been a significant benefit to school pupils. I don't think anyone would contend that from the perspective of school pupils, delivery of education in this country has improved significantly. Now, it's been a challenge for local authorities. It's been a challenge for school staff. But when I look at the increased rigor that's been introduced into the curriculum, when I look at the independence that's been given to school leaders, when I see the money that's been put in to narrow the gap in terms of the pupil premium, I see significant achievements that have been delivered over the last 6 years, and we shouldn't forget that. Looking forward, I have no sense where the Secretary of State wishes to go. The one thing that we have got is that for the education ministers within the department, they are all still in place. They're being joined by the higher education ministers. But I expect that the white paper and the policy will continue. But it remains to be seen. We will obviously monitor that very closely over the months ahead.
Thank you. Judy, is there a supplementary?
Yes, there's not a lot left for me to say, obviously, except that when I was a little girl, I was brought up to believe that the word radical was a really positive and good one. And would David agree with me that it isn't always the case? Radical doesn't necessarily mean excellent.
It's possible that David can find a question in there.
Well, in this case, if you are focusing on the pupils, and it's the pupils who are absolutely key in this, my contention is that the education that's certainly been delivered in Hertfordshire has significantly improved as a result of the changes that the last two governments have brought in. You know, I am very confident that I will be announcing shortly that 90% of our schools will be considered good or outstanding by Ofsted. We're very confident that that will be announced by the end of this term. And from my perspective, that is a significant benefit of the radical reform that's happened in education over the last 6 years.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from the Conservative group? Chris Hayward.
Will my Cabinet colleague agree with me, first of all, to welcome the appointment of Justine Greening into this robust and excellent new Tory Cabinet that has recently been formed by Prime Minister May? And will he further accept my congratulations on the 90% that he will soon to be able to announce of Ofsted... soon be able to announce of Ofsted ratings of our schools? And will he further, Madam Chairman, join me in recognising the outstanding quality of education that the vast majority of children in Hertfordshire enjoy in our schools?
David Williams.
I'd like to thank my friend for that question. And... It is quite one of the things I've come across in having this portfolio is when I meet an official or an officer of the National Union of Teachers, one of the first questions that is asked of me is, where were my children educated? And I'm delighted to say that they were educated in one of our comprehensive schools in Hertfordshire. And in that context, I'm very pleased to see that Justine Greening is probably the first minister who's had an education portfolio whose education has exclusively happened in the maintained sector. So I welcome that. So I welcome that in government. So, and then just to reiterate, yes, we are really very pleased indeed that by the end of this school term, we will be confirming that 90/91% of our schools have been rated good or Ofsted, and I would ask all members to welcome that and applaud it.
Yeah. I think I have to ask Chris Hayward. I'm really sorry, I think we need an element of, decorum and good behaviour in the council, even though it is hot. I wonder whether, Chris Hayward, whether you had a supplementary?
No.
Splendid. In that case, we still have just over 5 minutes left, so we go back to item 7A, which is questions to the leader of the council. So, is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Chris White.
Would the leader agree with me that it is important that in all services, officers work closely with local members about planning the future of those services? And will he endeavour to ensure that when it comes to things like school place planning, members are not left, dangling in the wind with inadequate information compared with, for instance, parents' groups and others about what options are available and what ways forward there are?
Rob Gordon.
Indeed, there is an expectation that local members are kept fully in the loop. If there's some suggestion they're not, I'm sure that David has picked that up and will pursue it even more diligently than I might.
Is there a supplementary question? No. Splendid. A Labour member. Is there a question from the Labour group? Sharon Taylor.
Thank you. My question relates to my leader's question earlier around the exit from the European Union. Presumably there will be at some point a discussion around how that might impact on the County Council's business and so on. I hope that there will be a cross-party discussion about that, because there'll be all sorts of things, I'm sure, and I hope that the leader will instigate a cross-party discussion. But also I would like to see an urgent briefing for members around the position of the Treasury Management Strategy in the light of the reduction to the UK sovereign rating.
Thank you. Rob Gordon.
Well, as always, our decisions are taken in the context of full advice, where that full advice has a Brexit element that I'm sure will be incorporated. On the Treasury management issue, yes, I'm sure that those who are closer to that than I am will be keeping a ready eye, and will advise those who need to be advised if we need to adjust our approach.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary, Sharon? Right, moving on, is there a question from a Conservative member? No, so we then move on to environment, planning and transport. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? No. Is there one from a Labour member? Yes, Leon.
Thank you. Can I just ask the portfolio holder regarding what was previously the previous mayor's London plan and how it impinged on the home councils, particularly in Hertfordshire, and that we now have a new mayor who actually is thinking slightly differently, and it could be more conducive to a good relationship with London than we, you know, over the planning aspects of not just transport but also the housing development and so on that they had, that they were talking about, which I think was about 49,000 a year for the London area, and of course it was probably going to get pushed out further out to us. So will he have, well, can I ask him if he will have some fruitful discussions with the mayor, the new mayor for London, and see where we can fulfil our obligations in a sensible way?
Derek Ashley.
One of the problems, of course, that we've got outside of London is that London has a strategic planning authority, and outside of London we have a myriad and mishmash of local planning authorities who are supposedly supposed to be getting together in duty to cooperate to actually come up with coherent strategic policies. Now, and that's a challenge for London, and London have said that's a challenge for them because you get to the boundary of the GLA and you fall off the edge, and frankly, they've never known quite who to talk to. Now, there is a wider southeastern a grouping who have been put together represent the interests of those areas immediately outside of London and the impact London has on them. Now, whether that will bear much fruit, I don't know. I'm not sure because of course the size of that grouping represents areas that frankly are so far away from London that in fact the impact of London doesn't actually affect them much at all. I mean, if you're living in Clacton, for example, or Jaywick Sands, they've got immediate sort of issues to deal with, but they're not necessarily linked to London. I'm of the view that we do need to have a much closer relationship with London in the Hertfordshire context, and I think that view is shared by other authorities in the immediate donut around London. Now, whether we can achieve this through the wider southeastern grouping, I'm not sure, but I'm very active discussing this with various leaders and our representative on that grouping, who's the leader of East Hearts, because there is a view that we have to have a much closer relationship with London on a whole range of things, not least of all transport. Not least of all transport, and as I say, I've taken the view that as far as TfL is concerned, we need to look at something completely different. At the moment, we have no representation on the TfL board, yet they're operating services increasingly across the border, rail and bus, and I think we need to look radically, using that
Derek,
term again.
Derek, thank you very much indeed.
At
Leon,
that arrangement.
Is there a supplementary? No? Well, there we go. Thank you. Is there a Conservative question? Is there a question from a Conservative member? Sorry. No. So we move to highways. Questions to the executive member for highways. Is there a question from the Liberal Democrat group? Sandy Walkington.
Thank you. The dual carriageways, certainly to the south of St Albans, and I suspect that probably elsewhere in the county, are a wonderful blaze of golden yellow, and we haven't even started putting our poster boards up yet. And it is actually ragwort. And ragwort is a source of great distress to people who graze horses, but also to gardeners and allotmenteers. And I know it's been discussed previously in this chamber. I just wondered, is this the colour of things to come, or are there intentions to deal with it?
And I need to say we've finished our hour, so Terry Dorris is allowed to answer the question, but there will be no supplementaries. Please, Terry.
I think the first thing I would have to say is I'm very concerned to hear that Liberal Democrats are thinking of putting signs up on the highways, which of course is absolutely illegal. And I think that if we found any of those signs, we would have to take severe action against them, especially as they would be classed as littering the highways, which is something that our opposition friends or opposition folks are so anxious about. In terms of the weed control, Ringway do have a contract to actually undertake noxious weed control, which they do on a planned risk basis approach under the Category 5 service, and that's the responsive maintenance under Category 2. So it is important that we do actually maintain the weed control, but we also we have to be careful that we undertake the weed control using the right materials and the right antidotes for this, and at the same time we also do it at the right time of year so we don't disturb anybody. And talking of disturbing anybody, I'm pleased to be able to report to Judy Billing that the work that she reported earlier on as not having started, started yesterday.
And on that note, we have reached our hour. So that's the end of item 7. So we now